My name is Aida Perry, and we are recording today, October 14, 2022, with Amina Washington at the Street Sense Media office in Northwest Washington, D.C. Hey, Amina. You know, I'd like to know a little bit about you. Let's start from your childhood, early life, and school. When and where were you born?
I was born in Columbia Hospital in Washington, D.C. on L Street Northwest, which no longer exists. Now it's an apartment building.
Okay. Can you describe the area or city or town that you grew up in Washington, D.C.?
I didn't grow up in D.C., but I spent most of my when I was born, I moved off to Maryland. And it was kind of rough as a child, but as I got older, I experienced a lot of like bullying in school, and I kind of got over that. So the area that I lived in was kind of rough because the children and I didn't get along too well. But then when I got older, we moved away from the area, and I was treated better as a child.
You were do what?
As a child, I was treated better. Oh. And I got over all of the madness in school and changed schools and eventually moved back to D.C. and spent the majority of my childhood in D.C.
Can you tell me where in D.C. did you spend your time in?
Northwest, upper Northwest D.C. on New Hampshire Avenue. And then we moved further down. As I got older, we moved further downtown. I spent my older childhood, like my teenagehood. I moved down to the lower part of Northwest around Georgia Avenue. And then we moved down to North Capitol Street. And I went to school there, and school was fine. I went on plenty of trips in school. I spent a lot of time doing sports in school. And then at age 14, I was pulled out of my parents' custody, taken out of school, and was homeschooled.
Did you grow up with any siblings, like brothers and sisters?
I grew up with my sister. One older sister. The rest of my sisters, they were raised by my mom. We were not living together at the time, and two younger sisters, they just spent time with my mom while me and my older sister spent time with my dad. So it was kind of like a damaged childhood family because the family were separated.
What are some of your best memories from childhood?
I really liked, I had a lot of friends from school. I had a lot of times when I went out, went on trips, vacation, traveled a lot with kids, going to movies and playing out with them outside and just having a lot of fun. And of course, I was a video game addict and loved TV, and the best times with my family was when they took us out to spend time in restaurants and movies, and had a lot of fun together with my family. I had a lot of fun, like most of my fun was with my family and younger friends.
Okay, so you were saying that you were moving from here, and you've moved around
a lot.
You moved around a lot, but it was mainly you never really grew up in Maryland, but you kept coming back here to Washington, D.C.
I didn't grow up in Maryland. I spent when I was born all the way up to age 3, I spent that time in Maryland. We moved out, and then we moved back to D.C. when I turned 3 because my dad and my mom separated, and my mom continued living in Maryland. And then when I turned 14, I shipped out of state again to Florida, and taken out of the custody of my family, and that's like basically when I began with the homeless situation when I was 14.
So you were homeless when you were a younger age? Wow.
I started becoming homeless because I was taken out of the care of my family, and I was thrown into residential treatment because I refused to go to a foster home. So after I went to residential treatment, I stayed in Florida, was shipped to Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and by the time I came back to D.C., I was 20 years old and homeless.
Mm.
And my dad wouldn't really accept me into the household permanently, so I was like using his house to take showers and eat, and he let me sleep sometimes, but I wasn't on no lease. So I was homeless actually since I was 14, and it started at a young age, which is sad, but I don't find a reason why they would just take me out of my family's custody, because my family were fine with me and nothing really happened, but they wanted to make sure that nothing happened then, because I was like kind of a shy child and antisocial with the kids at school, and they were wondering what went on. So the counselors came, they took me into an evaluation and took me out of the custody of my family. And thought something was going on, and then they had to prove it and fight it in court. And
it could have been somebody who may have thought that, it could have been a teacher, it could have been anybody that might have thought that you were being abused or something.
It was neighbors falsely.
Or neighbors, yeah.
There were neighbors making false reports. It was the bottom floor, because we were above them in an apartment. That caused the family to lose their apartment at one point, our apartment at one point. And my dad was sleeping on the street for a while, and I was sleeping in his house, his friend's house, and then eventually they just removed me out of their custody and placed me in residential treatment. And ever since then, I was just homeless.
Wow, that's amazing. That's some really life challenges you faced growing up, even at 14.
Yeah, wow. All because of a false report.
False report, yeah. A lot of families go through. I went through that, too.
Yeah.
A false report. Yep, and it's terrible.
And then when I turned 20 years old, I spent a lot of time with my dad until he died, all the way until I turned 28. He died at age 83, and I was consistently homeless since then. And on the street, I had a place three times. This is my third time getting a place to stay. But before then, I had my little issues, of course. I dipped and dabbled here and there, trying to survive. Panhandled. I found out after, I stayed on the street for I don't know, since 2005, I was consistently on the street. I would say after my dad died, I had absolutely nowhere to go. And I stayed on the street, sleeping on the streets since he died. But I was actually homeless before then, and I just kind of found resources through, after someone saw me sleeping on the street, they gave me a tent, and I got hooked up with Miriam's Kitchen, and they started feeding me, they did outreach, and then eventually they offered me a spadette, and I've been on the spadette since 2018. And the waiting list, I did a V V-A-R-V-I Spadet, whatever it's called. V-A-R-V-I Spadet.
A what?
V-I Spadet or V-A Spadet. The one that leads you to rapid rehousing. I ended up getting rapid rehousing through V-A Spadet.
Oh, rapid rehousing, yeah, you're talking about?
Okay. Yeah, I ended up getting that after I did the V-I Spadet. Through Miriam's Kitchen, because I did it 3 times before. I did it in 2018, I did it in 2019, and I did it in 2022. And they found out that my issues it put me in a place where they asked me questions that had it, where I was, where I fell into the category where I needed it. Rapid rehousing, and because I ended up being diagnosed with a disability, and so that kind of speeded the processes, and they looked into it and said, okay, I qualify for rapid rehousing, which I ended up getting this place that I have now. And then once I got this place, I ended up in permanent supportive housing. And permanent supportive housing has been really, really helpful to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm also in permanent supportive housing. Yeah. I'd like to know, Amelia, what changes have you seen where you used to grow up, like on Capitol Street? Have you seen any changes over there since you, have you been back over there?
I've been back over there. It's just that they knocked down a couple of buildings and rebuilt some of this area. It used to be like a bad, negative area. A lot of drugs, a lot of violence. And that changed a lot since they tore down a couple of buildings where they were subsiding and selling drugs. And like, I slept on the street over there, and it wasn't a good experience sleeping. I slept in different areas and experienced different things. I slept in alleys. I've slept on benches. I've slept in abandoned buildings. The experience with that, some of that wasn't good. Then I moved further uptown and started sleeping uptown. It started getting better. The experience sleeping on the street was not fun. Because not only because of the violence on the street, but the weather conditions, they were just very... I ended up with hypothermia. I ended up with pneumonia twice just from sleeping on the street.
Mm-hmm. That can happen. Your health can be in jeopardy.
Yeah. And I was attacked twice on the street by a couple of guys. And I was robbed, I was attacked, and that's my experience, like, as a younger person. But when I got older, I learned how to deal with the streets. I learned what to do and who to stay away from and what things to do to take care of myself, especially with these resources, because the resources, they didn't have these resources all this time I was on the street. It's like, if this housing thing is recent and it's really helpful, but like I would say a couple of years ago, didn't exist.
Okay, so since you talk about North Capitol area or New Hampshire, you used to live on New Hampshire. Have you been back over there? That, were there any restaurants or stores that you miss or remember?
There were a lot of changes. The hospital that I was born in no longer exists. Of course, I go back and see where my dad used to work. He had a business at the bottom. It's still vacant. Mm-hmm. And somebody rented it out once before, but it's still vacant. And they redid it. The restaurants are redone, remodeled, but they're the same. Like most things over there are the same, but remodeled and fixed up a little mm-hmm. since I've been living there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Maina, how and when did you first hear about Street Sense Media?
I heard about Street Sense in 2009. I heard about it, but I didn't know how to get involved. And I've been talking to vendors and on and off and just speaking to them when I see them on the street. And then in 2022... this year, I decided, hey, I'm going to go up there and give it a shot. And I became a vendor myself. And I've come to see this place has done a lot for me. As far as finances, case management, this place has done a lot for me. I heard it through vendors. I heard about it through vendors. And I came to try it out, and I like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how long have you been working with Street Sense Media now?
I would say since March or April.
Since this month of April?
Yeah.
April, so April, this is October, so the April, May, June, July, August.
If I'm not mistaken.
September, October, 7 months. Okay.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
So, can you give me more detail how Street Sense Media impacted your life?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does. It gave me a strong, it made me stronger and willing to work and willing to make benefits. It gave me a lot of help with benefits and as far as money and helping me to get things to eat and support myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Street Sense is about, is yeah. to try to help everybody. Because when I first came here back in 2011, I was in the streets as long as you. You know, I was in and out of shelters, kicked out of shelters. I just couldn't do the shelter
same
thing.
Same here.
Yeah, I just couldn't
so
do
I
it.
Decided to
so
move
I
to
learned from the street people how to, you know, live in the streets, but not to be sleeping on that concrete. You have to get that cardboard. You know,
yeah.
they taught me all those great things how to survive.
Yeah.
So once I did that, I was okay. And then it was really, really cold, so I had to get the hotline van
yeah.
to take, and they took me right back to the shelter. I got kicked out. But that's okay, because you know what, a good thing came out of that, because I got an offer apartment from N Street Village, and I ended up with permanent supportive housing.
Oh,
but you know what, Street Sense did give me the tools and the vendors before I came along, you know, because you got to talk to the veterans, you know, they teach you how to do certain things, how to sell, what to do, and it works. You know,
yeah.
And Street Sense staff, I have to admit, sometimes we do get a little angry with them, you know, but that's just life, you know. But they teach you how to be responsible for self, mm-hmm. and that's important, because, you know, that's really important for all of us. And just about everybody I interview, including you, and you only been here for 7 months. You're
yeah.
saying you get a lot of love, and they also give you tough love.
Yeah.
And they're teaching you how to be responsible out here in the society. And that's a good thing.
Some people need that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people need that lesson in life.
Exactly.
How to help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How to help yourself and to support others.
Mm-hmm. That's what Street Sense is about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, are there any different ways are you or have you been involved with Street Sense Media, such as, you know, workshops and stuff like that? I mean,
oh yeah, the workshop, the poetry classes, the art classes, the little where they do the acting roles.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy those classes a lot. They help me with getting papers to sell. They help me learn how to write,
mm-hmm.
and teach me. It's basically like school. It just
mm-hmm.
helps me to write, brings back my memory on how to write a poem or tell a story. Just literature just teaches me a lot. And it brings me back to the school days. I'm just like, yeah, this is good. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's the same thing with me, too. I didn't know how to write when I got here, and I was just like, ah. And then all of a sudden, all these creative juices come rolling out. I know how it is.
And I didn't know that I was a poet until I started writing poems.
See? You got your skill back. Everybody is gifted to something.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, you know. And have you tried their acting classes?
Oh, yeah. I've done a couple of them. I haven't been present for the majority, but I've done a couple of their acting classes. And I'm looking forward to doing more.
Oh, okay. See? Hey, that's a good thing, girl. Yeah, I love their acting classes. They are awesome. I know. I started acting. I remember when before the COVID-19 set in, we used to do our little acting in front of an audience. Oh, yeah. And people would be laughing and carrying on. But, you know, we had a lot of fun. We enjoyed ourselves. And, boy, I didn't know I had any acting skills. Yeah, I know how that is. So, is there something you wish more people knew about Street Sense Media or your work with Street Sense Media?
I'm just focused more on the people who don't have jobs, and if they don't know anything about Street Sense Media, I would suggest that we all go out and just tell the streets how we could do this together. And I wish that they knew more about the writing, how fun it is, and also it helps with the benefits, it helps with your skills, your helps motivate you and gets you to do positive things. It helps with positivity. It keeps you off the street because you have all day classes, you have papers to sell. You have a lot to benefit off of with Street Sense Media. And believe it or not, you never know who you're going to sell the paper to, who you're going to come across out on that street. Because I've, seen senators, I've seen people like that. And it's kind of an awesome thing to do. You never know who's going to read your paper. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Never know, exactly right.
Right.
So how is Street Sense Media important to you?
So it's important when it comes to the case management, the housing, the benefits, of course. I keep mentioning that because I have low income. It's important to come here because you have a lot of case management. You have a lot of support. It's not just the paper, but it's also the supports, the community support. They help us to get along. They help us to support one another, talk to one another, and to, there's a lot of things.
Some of the things that they have is like...
They have... I mean, it's such a small place, but it has such a big benefits to people, big things to offer. Housing is the main thing. Mm-hmm. Focusing on homelessness, focusing on who's entitled to these things that the government has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're looking at, is what the government offers us. Not everyone who deserves it has it. And the only reason why, one of the reasons why is because the word is not spread enough. It's spread, but not enough. It's not that they're not doing their job, it's that we people don't hear about it. Because people on the street, not everyone knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to offer. There's so much help out there. Street Sense is offering a lot of that support and trying to let us all know that, hey, someone's out there.
Exactly, yeah. And I remember when I was out in the streets and I was just a vendor, I used to try to encourage a lot of the women to go to N Street Village during their daycare program. I mean, that was the best daycare program. And I wouldn't even tell you about it, you know. It's a great program. And they serve breakfast, lunch, but you do a little chores, and they're a little menial chores. It's no big deal, you know. It's for women, but they also have all kinds of activities that you could do all during the day. Yeah. And then there are different activities every day, you know, during the day.
And then they donate clothes and stuff like that.
Yep. And Street Village is awesome.
It's the SRO, and then they have the programs. Mm-hmm. And then they have the separate shelter, mm-hmm. Pat Handy, who are associated mm-hmm. with them.
They're not there at Pat Handley anymore. They're doing some renovation. They had pipe problems, so now they're over there at that Hostel Hotel that's on 11th Street.
Oh, okay.
They're over there now.
Well, that's even better hotel.
Well, that's just a temporary, because of the where Mission was used to be at, the Central Mission.
Yeah.
Now there's Pat Handley, that building.
Yeah.
They were having problems, so they're
doing
renovations.
But they do have the hotels for the homeless mm-hmm. people who are looking for housing, which is mm-hmm. also another program that I like.
Oh, they got a lot of housing now. N Street Village has a...
Of course.
I live in one of their housing. I'm trying to get out of Erna's house. I'm sick of Erna's house.
I like where I live now. It's basically an apartment mm-hmm. that they found that they could support. But this one was through Miriam's Kitchen, and I would suggest anyone who needs housing to find one of these programs and just do this with that and just get into housing. It's not easy for everyone. I'm going to tell you that much. It's not easy for everyone because not everyone is eligible for housing, but everyone is eligible for some type of shelter because no one deserves to be on the street.
No one deserves. I understand that, really. I do. But there's some people who don't know how to live in a housing or an apartment, and that also has been addressed. I thought that it was unfair what they did. I don't know if anybody remember what happened in Cleveland Park, where there were people who were paying the market price in that building, and then they shoved all these people off the streets into the building. And while you're going out your apartment, you see all these needles and people slumping down, vomit, piss, you know. And people were it just defeated the purpose. You know, I mean, you would think that the city did this purposely, you know, to say, oh, well, I told you so, that, you know, homeless people in the streets can't have housing. They don't know how to, but you can't put us all in one basket. That's the thing, you know.
But the people who do that are the people who need help.
Exactly.
They don't just need an apartment.
They need help.
They need help.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the mental health people who can't take care of themselves.
Exactly.
And those are the ones who need help the most. They need housing. Everyone deserves
it. Housing, exactly.
But there are people who need help mm-hmm. along with these houses. And that's what case management is supposed to be for. When we get supportive housing or whatever program we should have case managers that check up on us, make sure that everything is okay, mm-hmm. and to support their housing so they could sustain, so they could keep it.
Exactly.
And I know there's some that don't want, I mean, I've seen some people who don't want housing, and I don't really try to push them to do anything that they don't want to do, but there are most people want housing. And most people deserve it. And I won't say that not one person doesn't deserve housing.
Right.
Everyone deserves it. Even if they're on drugs,
that's what I call, you need to have transitional housing.
Yeah.
This is why we need more of those built here in any city.
Yeah.
And then the professionals in mental health can either rehabilitate them in some kind of way, and maybe through, you know, medication or through some kind of a program from they can, you know, go through to get ready, you know, because once you've been out in the streets, that's all you know. If you've been out there like 5 years, 6 or 10 years, that's all you know is how to survive. If you weren't a drug addict before you became be in the streets, you will become a drug addict. You might end up becoming an alcoholic and start smoking cigarettes because you're stressed out.
Yeah.
The streets is not a joke. Right. You know, people need to understand that. So once we understand that homelessness, once they do get into an apartment, they should not be in an apartment among market price people who are paying the market price.
Right.
They should, you know what I'm saying? They should be in transitional homes where they could be monitored by professional mental health caseworkers. So then if they could see that they are their model citizens, yes, then let them have an apartment of their own. But you just can't throw people into something
that they're
not going to understand. They're not going to understand that. And in fact, none of them were acting like that in the streets until they got into their apartment. Now they're really confused, you know. So that's why I always say transitional housing should be built too.
Yeah.
And people should be able to live in an apartment, maybe two or three people, but a lot of space, rooming space, you know, and constant people who have professionals to make sure that they're doing things the right way. But you know, I live in a permanent supportive housing, and I don't think it's right. I'm kind of gotten to a depressing situation now because I'm living among people who should be in transitional housing.
Yeah.
And I'm being, it's just crazy. But I've been trying to get out and try to get my voucher, you know, and everything, and I ain't written about it. I still, people come in up and ask me, nope, nothing's been done, oh boy.
Right, but the thing I don't understand is why they're making homeless people pay for anything. Because most homeless people don't have money or little to no income. And I'm wondering why the government is making people pay something that they don't have. Something that they don't hardly have enough to survive off of. And that's one of my things, is that they make people who just got off the street, now they get this voucher, now they have to pay 30% or whatever of their income. And I don't think that's fair until they start working. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, at least get them a job, at least get us jobs instead of leaving us unemployed in this housing, just surviving in the house, you know?
Because well, permanent supportive housing, they don't make you pay anything.
Well,
they have you pay into an escrow.
Not that program, but the voucher program, they want you to pay at least
one third
of your income. And some of us don't have that. Some of us only have survival money, and which leaves us in survival mode, like we were on the street. Some of us lose our apartments because we're paying for the apartment and we don't have enough. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my experiences, is that I was paying for an apartment at one time and I couldn't afford it. It took all of my income and I couldn't afford to pay the bills and eat. I couldn't afford to pay rent, bills, and eat. And I was paying the majority of my check because I only get a certain amount of money a month. Mm-hmm. And they want to take what the government gives me because...
They weren't taking one third of your income then.
They were taking what... Yeah.
No, they weren't. If they're taking all of your money.
No.
They
That's
weren't.
What ended up happening at the end, is that I ran out of money because I was paying bills. I was paying rent. Basically market rent.
Okay, well, yeah, but so if you're paying market rent, you weren't paying one third of your income.
I was paying the whole rent.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You weren't getting, you weren't
well,
paying one third.
I don't think anyone should pay market rent regardless of how much they make.
Yeah, see, you weren't paying market, if you're paying market rent, you weren't paying one third of your income.
No, not that time, but this time they want me to pay one third of my income But I don't think I could afford bills right now. I don't think I could afford rent right now. And people like that, because I'm going to have to start paying bills, I'm going to have to start paying rent and trying to eat and get my basic necessities done. Social Security doesn't pay for all of that. No. Social Security gives you a certain amount of money a month. And I don't think anyone should touch Social Security. And I don't think that if we're not working, why should we pay anything?
I agree with you. You shouldn't. You
but
shouldn't have to.
Housing that someone gave us, I mean, that's just not, it doesn't add up to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the housing part helps, but maintaining this housing is what puts a toll on some people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I understand that your first time experience of homeless was at the age 14.
Yeah.
But you're no longer homeless,
right? No longer homeless, no.
Okay, that's a good thing. It's because you're in the permanent supportive housing.
Yeah.
So what is something that you want people to know about your story that you think you're often misunderstood?
Well, the thing is that my story began as a child, well, a teenager, and I'm going to say that it's not easy. People think it's easy. People keep saying, get a job, and all that stuff, but it's not that easy. I'm misunderstood, maybe because of my looks, I don't know, but I'm misunderstood as someone with low income, with a poor person. I'm usually discriminated against. I'm usually put down, and even though I don't think anyone should discriminate on homeless people, because I'm just a person, and there's nothing that you should misunderstand about. Someone's on the street, but just like people, like anyone else, and I don't think anyone should misunderstand or just say, oh, you don't belong here or whatever.
Why would anybody discriminate against you?
They would do it for a lot of people, even if they just got a house. I've seen so much discrimination on the street. Like, they wouldn't let they would just accuse me of stealing because I have my bags on my shoulder. They would just, like, literally just, like, judge somebody. And that's what they misunderstand, is that I'm just going in the store to shop, or I'm just coming to use the bathroom because there's nowhere, I don't feel like using the bathroom on the street, or I'm just sleeping here. But they misunderstand that. They just don't see that someone's just trying to find a place to stay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to understand why people will discriminate you because of a backpack.
That's what I don't understand, but that's how people are these days. Mm-hmm. And if you have a backpack and you have a lot of stuff, people in the stores, you go in the store, even if you have a lot of, like, even if you have food stamps or cash or anything, you're trying to purchase something, they'll just follow you around the store.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
I've been through that. That's discrimination.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I was going to college.
They judge you because of your backpack, or judge you because of your looks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't understand why they would just look at somebody and say that they're trying to steal, or you don't belong in the store, you don't belong in this restaurant, you can't use the bathroom, you can't sleep here, you can't do this, because of the way you look, or because they think that you're trash. That's basically what they think.
Think about you, and that's a shame, because black people doing this to you.
Yeah.
Black employees doing this on black folks. Because I remember when I used to go to Strayer University back in 2004 or 2003, I used to stop off at 7-Eleven and get me a little donut and a cup of coffee before heading for that morning class.
Yeah.
And then these Ethiopians that were running the store, they didn't own it, they ran it. And they would just walk. I mean, it's an itty bitty store, and follow me everywhere I went. From I knew the owners. All right, yeah. there were Asian owners, and I happened to know them personally. I sure complained when I got the chance, and the guy got fired. Yeah. I didn't want him fired; just wanted him to stop following me. But right. You know, they got rid of him.
Sometimes. I just told them, let the cameras do their job and just stop following me. Mm-hmm. But they just literally, and I've had the police called on me a couple of times because they thought I was stealing because of my backpacks that I used to mm-hmm. carry around. And I was like,
there's always somebody might say something about you, because that happened to me recently. I'm trying to leave out of Safeway on New York Avenue. And the security guards, they're black, and they come and ask me, because I was in self-checkout, and they were saying, are you stealing food? I'm like, what? I gave them my receipt. They're looking at a $200 receipt, okay? And then the lady who was doing this, the employee that was doing this self-checkout, she goes, and she comes back and says to the supervisor and the security guard, oh, it was actually a customer that came to me and said that she was stealing food. I said, did you ask her for her receipt? And did you ask her, that was nothing but a Karen, okay? It was a Karen. And I said, well, you should have asked her for her receipt, since she's so busy looking at me. I said, see, when people are miserable and they happen to pay all this high rent and pay out of pocket, I'm gonna tell you, people in D.C. or around the country are going to be a lot of homeless people eventually. They're yeah. going to be out in the streets. They're going to be working homeless people, middle class. They're not going to be able to afford anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's between keep your job and eat.
Yeah.
Well, I can't keep a roof over my head. And you got a lot of people now are literally living in cars or literally living in buses and remodeling. That's cheaper.
Yeah. And I see a lot of people who prefer to sleep in tents mm-hmm. because of how expensive housing is.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just rather save their money and sleep yeah. on the street mm-hmm. than to be broke living in a house
yeah.
and can't eat.
Well, that's something. So what changes would you like to see made in terms of addressing homelessness as an issue at a governmental level?
Well, I would like to see more people off the street who want housing. I would like to see more people get jobs. I would like to see more pay to Social Security, mm-hmm. higher Social Security income. I would like to see people who are unable to work to receive cash benefits, food stamps, and Social Security because they can't work. Not just leave them astray and just leave them on the street to starve and beg. Because a lot of people who are begging are a lot of people who don't have food stamps, who are denied food stamps, mm-hmm. who are denied Social Security. They're hungry. So I would like to see more people allow to use these resources instead of the government denying people and choosing certain people. I would like to see everyone qualify who's on the street, because if you're homeless, you qualify for everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're homeless, you qualify. If you don't have a house, if you don't have food, if you don't have running water, you qualify for any benefits they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, hey, I'm in the total agreement. I mean, you know, when prices go up, so should your income go up automatically,
yeah.
including Social Security, because I'm on Social Security myself. I worked all my doggone life. I worked ever since I was 14. I'm 67. And I'm, you know, and it's a shame that my Social Security is not high, you know, once the interest rates goes up
yeah.
and everything else, food goes up, everything goes up.
Yeah.
So I can't afford a carton of eggs, because now it's cost me $6.
And they're only giving certain people, oh, I don't know how many people, but I know most people get $100 to $200 worth of food stamps. That's not enough to survive for a month.
That's not enough.
That's not a month's worth of food these days.
A month's worth
of food, you have to have at least $1,000. I mean, if that's enough to survive off of. But $200 to $100 to $250 is not enough to survive off of.
No, it's not for a month. No, it's not. No. Not for an individual, not with the prices they got out
not
there.
Not even for one person.
That's what I'm saying, for one person.
That's like two weeks worth, if that much.
Because
you know, if you go and buy a meal, you're spending at least $20 per meal. And if you go and put food in your refrigerator, you're spending $100 to $200 to fill your refrigerator up for that day. And that food probably won't even last you a month.
You're right. I get food stamps and I'm a senior citizen.
I try
to go to the market, and then they want to double the food stamps that they give you, the dollars they give you.
Yeah.
That don't help. I mean, it helps a little bit, but it really don't help. Because the market has gotten higher. The food gotten higher. You know, and I'll be like, dang, this ouch. I mean, ouch. But yeah. I gotta eat, ouch.
And as the prices go up, so should our income, so should our food stamps. Don't leave us on the streets to starve, because if we can't afford food, we can't afford to feed ourselves and take care of ourselves, because basically that's a right, that's a human right. And I think we should be allowed to do such things. Or give us jobs if we want to work. Let us, you know, have more income, because prices are going up and they're going to continue to rise. And everybody deserves it. Everyone deserves it.
Yeah, and $15 an hour ain't kicking it. It might have kicked it back in the 70s, but it ain't kicking it. No, not today. $15 an hour is nothing. Right. Because now with the prices, now we defeated the purpose.
Right.
The, you know, of the wages.
Right.
Now you got to give me another $15 more so I can eat.
Right.
That's ridiculous. So that's $30 an hour.
Right.
give me my $30 an hour so I can eat. I know I'm going to barely eat now, but everything's gone up.
But even people who have never been home is already housed and who are working, they're complaining that they need more income.
Yes, they are. They're complaining a lot, and they're, and nobody can buy a house because the interest rate has gone up so badly. who's stupid enough to buy a house with the interest rate the way it is?
Right, everyone is living in hotels and free hotels and house, permanent housing and stuff like that, because they can't afford their rent.
They can't afford it.
Soon to become homeless. Some people are soon to become homeless because of high prices. Prices going up on everything.
And the working class in D.C. and the young professionals are trying to get help, and they are going into the permanent supportive housing. Yes, they are. They've been doing that for years. Don't think for a minute they haven't. I know a few of them.
I've heard so many people say they want to leave D.C.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the prices.
Yeah, well, certain places in down south, like Charlotte, North Carolina, they're income tax is 16%. I'm like, Jesus.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It went, but other parts of North Carolina is a little cheaper. And then South Carolina is cheaper. Yeah, but you gotta, people are moving. People want to have to move.
Yeah.
Can't afford it.
A lot of people are choosing homelessness over high prices. And that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous that people have to make that decision just to feed themselves.
I agree. I agree 100%. Oh. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Armenia Washington, for being here with us. And I really loved your story. And I'm really, really sorry about you having had to endure these, you know, homelessness at such a young age.
Yeah.
It robbed you of your teenage years. Oh, my gosh. I wish I'd known you back then. I would have grabbed you. You would have been my little girl. No, if I had known that, and I was living here, and my mom has a house, and you would have been my daughter, and you would have been my mom's, fourth grandchild.
Well, thank you. I'm telling you,
we would have gave you your teenage years. We would have gave it back to you. Definitely would have. I wish I had known you then.
I would have enjoyed it.
Boy, oh, you were robbed of your years.
Yeah.
But you're a survivor, and that's what counts.
Yeah, it just made me stronger. It didn't tear me down. It just made me stronger.
Okay.
Becoming homeless just makes me grow strong and more grateful for life.
Oh, all right.
Thanks.
So thank you for coming.